it's really detrimental to actually doing what we're attempting to do, which is make the playoffs. But if we're going to have him at full strength coming through these games, he's got to go through this process. There is no alternative, and there wouldn't be for any other player.
What's up, guys? Welcome to Birdwatch. I am Christian Clark, the Pelicans beat writer for NOLA.com and The Advocate, here today with Jeff Nowak.
Hey, y'all.
And Jeff, we have some real basketball to go over. Just the feeling I got when I watched that game yesterday was so good and pure. Like, I felt like I wanted to headbutt the wall like 10 times while that game was going on. I mean, it was a really interesting game, but I just hadn't been that excited in so long. I forgot what that feel like, just the adrenaline rush of watching like in a pretty important game.
Yeah, I was very much like kid on Christmas morning vibes, like all day. Like, you know, that like when you have time or trouble falling asleep the night before Christmas because you're so excited. That's what I was like all morning. I was like, oh, no, there's still 8 hours left. And you know what? I've been watching basketball pretty much nonstop for the last 2 days now. And it feels normal. That's the thing I wasn't sure about. Like, I'm watching this game and it just looks like a basketball game. It doesn't look like 100 or 200 people just trapped inside of a bubble.
I think you're exactly right. It doesn't feel that weird for how weird it is.
Like, even the virtual fans, I have to, you know, I will eat my words. I now like the virtual fans. I think it's fun. It's just like when they show the wide shot and you just see like all the faces peering over. Kerry Kittles was there in one of the games today. It's great. I'm enjoying it. And you can hear them. That was a question I had. They can make noise, which good for them. It's going to be fun.
I think I watched that game probably 60% on my feet standing and 40% sitting. I think I was standing more than I was sitting just because, I mean, it was so fun, really. I mean, I was shouting a little bit. You know, I'm writing on deadline from the couch. Probably not the most professional behavior, but whatever. I mean, it was really fun.
And it was, for the most part, good basketball. One of the things I was expecting was really, really sloppy basketball. And I think you saw that from the Pelicans, but not to the extent that it was any different from the regular season version of the sloppy Pelicans. But like, for the most part, both teams shot well, at least in the second half of the Jazz. They shot really poorly in the first half, but the Pelicans came out firing in that game in a way that I did not expect, other than obviously Mr. Lonzo Ball, who had probably a nightmare getting game, too, if we're being honest. But
yeah, so 20 turnovers from each team. You know, it was a little sloppy in parts, which was to be expected from, you know, teams that hadn't played basketball in 4 months. But yeah, I thought the quality of play was still pretty high, all things considered. The Pelicans, you know, went down early. Then they got up by as many as 16 points. And then the gut punch. We're going to go over all of that today. But I wanted to lead off with the Zion Williamson stuff. Just some really weird Zion Williamson stuff, you know, in the past 2 days and the past 2 weeks, really. Zion only played 15 minutes against the Jazz. You know, I saw a lot of parallels between this game and his NBA debut against the Spurs. You know, he didn't get as hot in this one as he did against the Spurs, obviously, but he played, you know, the four short stints at the beginning of each quarter, each between 3 and 5 minutes. The Pelicans did not use him down the stretch. He basically just had to sit there and watch the lead slip away. You could kind of see the anguish on his face. I felt bad for him. And, you know, after the game, the post-game interviews with Alvin Gentry and Zion himself, there was just some strange answers and some frustration that was just apparent. I mean, Alvin got asked straight up, you know, whether this was purely a conditioning thing. And he basically just said, look, the medical people told me the minutes or bursts that he could play. And that's what I did. I mean, he basically just said, this was out of my control. Like, I really didn't have any say in this. This was above my pay grade. And I was just following orders. You know, Zion was asked about this stuff and kind of gave some weird answers. And, you know, basically, David Griffin addressed the media today, you know, Friday, and kind of cleared the air and said that, you know, if anybody was in the situation that Zion was in, they would have done the same thing. You know, basically his rationale for being cautious was, look, everybody took 4 months off. We had this specific plan for getting these guys back in the court playing 5-on-5, And Zion had to take 13 days off between him attending to a personal family matter and then a quarantine. So yeah, we're gonna be careful. I mean, it was 13 days off. What did you just think of, you know, the explanations post game and then what Griff said today?
Yeah, well, so we talked about this, you know, in the last episode, which, you know, posted on Sunday, so it's not really last week's episode. But what I said then was I expected the short shifts, and I expected them to be shorter than you saw in the Spurs game, because, and that kind of all went true, except to the point that I also expected the reason for those really short shifts early on were that they were going to try to save up some of that equity if he was feeling right to come back at the end of the game, you know, and it felt like, at 15 minutes, and you're looking at, okay, when he came back against the Spurs, he played just about 20 minutes. I think his limit was probably in the 18-minute range. And they extended that because he had hit those threes. And you kind of felt like, okay, there's a media timeout. There's 3 minutes left. It's a tight game. He's only played 15 minutes. He could come back, and he didn't. And that's the part that threw me, because, you know, why is his restriction now more, you know, tighter than it was then? But I pointed this out then as well. Missing the scrimmages is the key part here in terms of how you can, you know, do the mental gymnastics to how you get to 15 minutes, because that's a significant element. You know, not being able to see him recover from live action is a significant element, and they're going to do everything in their power to be extra cautious. If you look back at the first scrimmage against the Nets, which was a shorter game, it was 10-minute quarters. Jrue Holiday and Brandon Ingram were both around 15 minutes. Lonzo had about 19. You know, so I think when what David Griffin came out and said today was that's kind of the trajectory he's on. And, you know, that they put out their injury report, he's not on it. You know, so, you know, there's no indication that it's an injury slowing him down. That's what they're saying. And, you know, I think you're going to find out in the next few games where you're at with him. And I think it's really going to be really frustrating for fans because, you know, the words David Griffin used today were he's not going to play significant minutes against the Clippers. I don't know what in David Griffin's definition significant is, but we're going to find out tomorrow. And I'm sure there are going to be a lot more angry tweets than if and when he doesn't finish the game.
Yeah, I think my definition of significant minutes is what is the average, you know, minutes total for a starter. I would peg that somewhere around 30. That's just my personal definition. You know, it was interesting that you brought up the scrimmages. That was something that Griff cited, you know, when he talked today. He made the point that, hey, in the first two scrimmages, all of our starters basically played, you know, 10, 15, 20 minutes. It wasn't until the third scrimmage that these guys were playing 25 plus. That was part of our plan. And, you know, Zion is part of that plan too. And if you, I guess, look at this game, this was like his first or second scrimmage. They kind of tried to treat it similar and give him a workload, you know, similar to what the starters got in those first two. So I kind of follow that a little bit. I want to talk about what he actually did on the court when he was there. If you're just looking at, you know, the box score line, 13 points, made 6 of 8 shots. He had 1 assist. It was really pretty. The plus minus was not great. I think it was a minus 15. I went back and rewatched it today, and I still thought, you know, I know what the plus minus was. I still thought he was pretty good. I mean, it's incredible. His ability to score so easily. Like, I wouldn't be surprised. I think he's at 0.79 points per minute played right now, 20 games into his career. Like, it's just unbelievable, his ability to score so easily when he's clearly not in the best shape. Like, just watching him out there on the court, it didn't look like he was moving around great to me. Like, he looked like a guy who just was playing basketball after he ate a Thanksgiving meal or something like that, and yet he's still throwing down alley-oops. So I don't think, you know, he looked great. He looked terribly mobile. And yet, I mean, he's still dunking. He's still finishing everything around the rim. I don't know. How did you kind of reconcile those things?
Yeah. So, you know, he looked a lot like he did at the beginning of in January when he came back, which is, you know, he does look like he's in a little better shape, but his conditioning, I don't think, is there. And I think those are two very different things. You know, fitness and conditioning are not the same thing. And it's like, I think his body is in the right shape, but he's just not used to running up and down the floor and playing live basketball. And you saw that in the fourth quarter. You know, his defense really, really got, I don't want to say sloppy, but uneven in the fourth quarter. You know, he would start possessions and he would cut, he would rotate well, and then they would end with a layup because he found himself out of position. And You know, I think that's just kind of what you deal with a rookie a lot of the time. And he's only played 19 or now 20 games. I've been saying 19 for so long. It's going to be weird to say 20 games because he's now played 20 games. But there are times where you look at it and you're like, okay, is this, you know, did he miss a defensive rotation because he's a young defender and he's still learning these NBA concepts? Or is it because he's tired and he's not moving like he should be? I don't know. And the idea that he could have come back at the end of that game, you know, maybe he could have, but I also think there's a realistic possibility that, like, you know, people are saying, oh, he can play more than 15 minutes. I don't know. Maybe, you know, he seemed tired. One of the comments he made to the press afterward was, you know, he doesn't want to be out there if he's actively hurting the team's chances to win. And I actually think that was probably one of the more genuine things that he said, which is because I don't think that he was feeling like he was in shape to play at that point. And I think anyone, if you haven't played live basketball for 3 months, would feel in a similar fashion after sprinting up and down the court.
Yeah, and one of the other things he said was basically, you know, they didn't even have to let me play. So I'm kind of paraphrasing here, but he said, you know, he felt fortunate to even be out there because, you know, with the Pelicans and everybody, it wasn't a foregone conclusion that he would play in that game. I mean, he didn't even get the green light until an hour before tip-off. You know, with the defense, my opinion is it's just a conditioning, a lack of playing 5-on-5 because I went back and watched a couple of those Duke games, you know, during the break, and he's just a very different guy at Duke. I mean, the way he got his points was a lot more off motion there. I mean, he's still really good, but the defense is the biggest difference and something that really pops. I mean, he was just a menace at forcing turnovers when he was at Duke. He really hasn't done that at the pro level. I mean, he can't really move his feet on the perimeter. I mean, we saw Mike Conley basically just say, see ya in the fourth quarter there with like a simple little rip through move. So I think, right. You know, I do expect him to become a good defender in time. I mean, the conditioning just needs to improve a lot. He just needs to play a lot more 5-on-5. But yeah, I mean, once he just gets enough time to like get some serious 5-on-5 under his belt, we will see, you know, signs of what he looked like as a defender at Duke.
Yeah, he referred to it as getting his quote unquote flow back. I don't know what that means. Is it I've like in my head I'm thinking of it as like when Austin Powers lost his mojo. You know what I mean? Because it's just like this just big, it's like, yeah, when I get my flow back. And I go, well, and someone asked him, like, how long do you think that's gonna take? And he was like, yeah, 2 or 3 games. It's like, well, I guess that's the going rate for flow. But yeah,
I thought of how Stella got her groove back, but continue.
There you go. Yeah, so you talk about Duke, and one of the things that he was able to do in college that you really haven't seen in the NBA, and to be fair, the athletes he's playing in the NBA are much different than what he saw a lot of time at Duke. But, you know, one of the things he did as well as anything else is he could switch out onto a guard on the perimeter, and they, you know, move his feet and move laterally and play a lockdown defense the way you saw LeBron play lockdown defense on Paul George and Kawhi Leonard on the same possession last night. Didn't even raise his arms over his shoulders and he shut both of them down. And that's just something you haven't seen from him, but it's something that he has shown the capability to do. And so defensively, that's kind of the benchmark of where I want to, until I see him do things like that, I'm not going to believe he's back physically to where he needs to be.
I think one of the biggest benchmarks that he's just not in the shape he was at Duke is he gets turned around on defense. Like a guy will try to go around him right or left and he'll turn his back and like his back will be towards the offensive player and he'll pick up a foul that way. I mean, really his only defense when he's asked to guard one-on-one on the perimeter is just, well, God, I hope I can recover in time. And, you know, that's just not a winning strategy long term. But like I said, I'm not terribly concerned about that. So I guess, you know, the thing about this tournament is that there's just no downtime between games. I mean, it's 8 games in a 15-day total. I mean, they're pretty much playing every other day, and, you know, they got one back-to-back mixed in there. There's not really any time for him to play 5-on-5 in practice. What are you just expecting from him, you know, going forward Saturday against the Clippers, Monday against the Grizzlies in terms of minutes total?
I mean, I don't know. And so one thing that came out today is the Clippers aren't practicing today. They played the late game and they decided not to practice today, and they won't have any availability today. And I think that's interesting because that's really the only day you have to install a game plan of sorts against a team, you know? And without that practice, are you still doing like film sessions? I imagine you are, but who knows? I think one of the reasons that you're seeing a lot of coy answers from David Griffin and from Alvin last night and from Zion last night is because they don't have the answers, because they don't have the time to evaluate what you're looking at. And I've said this a few times, like, today is really important. With Zion's going to probably, he's probably already gone to see trainers and to evaluate, it's like, okay, how are the knees holding up? How's the back holding up? And that type of soreness is what's going to, in my opinion, dictate how his minutes progress. If he wakes up this morning and his knees are shot, he needs to spend all morning in an ice bath before he can even set foot back on a court, that's a problem. And you probably won't see his minutes extend anytime soon. And without any significant downtime to really kind of massage that physically or figuratively and literally, yeah, I don't know. I'm not expecting more than 15 minutes tomorrow. You know, maybe on Monday, maybe against the Grizzlies, you'll see that extension. But I would be very surprised if I saw more than 15 minutes out of him tomorrow.
Yeah, we sort of have kind of a blueprint for this. I mean, if you just look at, you know, his NBA debut in the next couple of games, he played 18 minutes against the Spurs, 21 minutes in his second game, 27 minutes in his third game. And then, you know, he didn't reach the 30-minute mark until his fourth game. But we were talking before we jumped on the show, and you pointed out that this is a little bit of a different situation because he was able to play some 5-on-5 before the NBA debut, and he just hasn't had that 5-on-5 now. So it wouldn't even surprise me, you know, kind of like you were just saying, if they were even more cautious, you know, ramping it up compared to, you know, the first four games of his pro career. I personally wouldn't have minded if they had found a way to sneak him in there for the last 3 minutes. I get why they didn't. But I will say, too, I mean, I don't think that was the reason they lost this game. I mean, I think there were other reasons why they lost this game. And I think, you know, Zion not playing that much was like fourth or fifth down the list.
Right. I mean, Zion played the same amount in every quarter, and there was only one quarter they only scored 17 points in. And you can probably guess which one that is. And that was the same quarter they've just scored an abnormally low number of points in so many games this season, and oftentimes in games that they were leading in. The last time they played the Clippers, they went into the fourth quarter with, I want to say, an 8-point lead, and they lost. When they played the Lakers at home, they went into the fourth quarter with a 10-point lead, and they lost. And they scored, you know, I don't think they scored over 20 points in either of those fourth quarters. And the funny thing is, you can change the format, you can change the city, you can change so much about what's going on. The game last night was the same game I have watched dozens of times this season. It went just even blow for blow like the Jazz games always go. It's Rudy Gobert shooting a free throw in the final 10 seconds. Brandon Ingram taking a pull-up shot. You know, there was no blatant missed calls, so that's something at least. But it was just so remarkable to watch that game and just be like, I've seen this game before.
You're exactly right. There was that sense of inevitability when the fourth quarter started. When they were only up 8 or 9 going into the fourth quarter, like, I feel like every single Pelicans fan who had that game on was like, oh God, this is going to be really close at the end, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I tweeted midway through the third quarter, which is like, this is basically what you're watching here is just the same way that the Pelicans have lost so many games, which is they've played really well in the first half. They shot the lights out, but then they don't have that killer instinct in the third quarter of games. They get complacent, they get sloppy, and they let these really good NBA teams hang around. They don't put them away. And that's what you saw last night. You let Donovan Mitchell get into a rhythm, and then all of a sudden he scored 14 or 8 points in a row, I want to say, in the fourth quarter. You know, you let Rudy Gobert get confidence, and you know, he made those shots at the end, which I found interesting, and I think it's going to be interesting to watch. And a few players have said this, which is that they feel really comfortable shooting free throws, especially pressure free throws, in those moments because they don't have fans screaming at them. And I think that's like something to keep in mind. Like, I think you're going to see some really, really incredible shooting performances as these games go on. You know, like you're going to see Damian Lillard out here. You know, he's playing today. The Grizzlies and the Blazers played today. It's like, I wouldn't be shocked to see Damian Lillard throw down some insane shooting performance in one of these games, because there's really not a ton to take you out of your rhythm. I think you're going to see similar things from J.J. Redick, who I would be ashamed of myself if we went through this entire episode without taking a moment to recognize J.J. Redick's just fire in his eyes performance in that game. I mean,
he played his ass off.
It felt a lot like, you know, when a mom gains like super strength to lift a car to rescue her kid. You know, that's what J.J. Redick felt like when he got that rebound and threw it out to Josh Hart for the second chance three.
The charge he took too, like he got ran over by a pickup truck. Like you could tell that one hurt when he got up. Like he was just making the that was painful face.
Yeah, but he did. He got asked what he feels like physically after the game, and he said he's 35, but he might be physically 35, but mentally he's 27. So. And I believe him when he says that after you watch him do stuff like that. But yeah, he was incredible. And as long as he's on the floor, I think there's hope for the Pelicans to make the playoffs. He went 7 for 15. He only shot 3 for 8 from 3, but he had 21 points. He had a really nifty around-the-world fake, like a Rondo-style around-the-world fake in the first half.
Yeah, he did have the Rondo fake. I want to talk about the play at the end real quick, because it looked like maybe he had some daylight and they could have gone to him. I mean, basically the way they drew it up was B.I., you know, had the ball on the right side of the floor, and JJ came off kind of a double screen, and it looked like he had some daylight, but B.I. was guarded by Royce O'Neal, you know, had some space too. He took it at him. I thought B.I. got a really good look. I mean, I went back and watched that shot like two or three times, and it was halfway down. You could see Joe Okafor in the background with his hands raised, like he thought it was down. It was a really tough break. Do you think B.I. should have gone to JJ there? Did you have any issue with him getting that one up?
I have no issue whatsoever, because if Brandon Ingram is the guy, if he's gonna, you need a guy with killer instinct to be your star player, right? And if that's who you think Brandon Ingram is, and he gets a look like that, he takes that shot. You know, this isn't a situation where this isn't a college team where you're drawing up a shot for a guy they don't expect. You know, this is a situation where your star player makes that shot with the game on the line. And, you know, if they double him and he still takes that shot, you know, I think you have some second guessing to do, but that was a good look. They had no interest in that game going to overtime. It's the first game back in the bubble. You're not putting that game into overtime. You're winning that or you're losing that right there. I think that was the right call. And, you know, would you like to see Redick get a chance to make a game-winning shot there? Sure, but if you have your star player with a chance to win the game and a good look and you miss, you live with it. Because I think he gets that shot 10 more times. He makes it a good number of those times. And he's already hit a game-winning shot against the Jazz this year. So it kind of felt like it was his job at that moment.
Oh, yeah, the pseudo game winner.
And he said after the game he's been working on that shot. He likes that shot.
Yeah, I thought it was fine. I mean, I mostly, you know, really liked what I saw from Brandon on the offensive end. You know, they got in that early hole, and then he was really, you know, kind of the key guy and pulling him out of it. He went middle and dunked. He hit a couple of shots. He tailed off a little bit in the second half, but I liked the aggression from him. I thought he played a pretty good game in that end, even if it wasn't, you know, his most efficient performance or anything like that. You know, I thought really there were two main reasons why the Pelicans lost this game. Number one was turnovers. I mean, 20 turnovers against a team that's dead last in the NBA at forcing turnovers. And then the defense, I thought, was pretty rough in the second half. I believe the Jazz shot 16 of 21 at the rim in the second half. It was just way too easy. I mean, it was just a combination of, like, the Pelicans just could not guard on the perimeter, and then they didn't really, you know, have anyone in the interior who's going to challenge those shots. I thought this was a pretty rough game from Derek Favors, and I think the Jazz are just kind of a tough matchup for him because, you know, I think he is a good defender, and I like him on his team a lot, but I think, you know, he's not the most athletic guy. I think he kind of struggles when they go to that pick and roll and they have, like, an athletic, you know, lob finisher over the top and Rudy Gobert, Rudy got a couple of those. So the defense, I think, left a lot to be desired in the second half. I mean, I think that's what been one of the Pelicans' biggest issues all year long, is they just don't guard the ball very well for 48 minutes.
And especially in big moments. When Brandon Ingram was asked about that shot, the first half of the answer was about, that's like, I like that shot, I practice that shot, that's a shot I can make. And then the second half, this is only like a 30-second answer, but the second half of his answer was like, but it's the defense that was the problem. If he personally played better defense, he wouldn't have had to make that shot. He fouled Donovan Mitchell down the stretch there, and like, he didn't, that was just poor defense leading to a foul. And, if we're being honest here, that game, the Pelicans almost stole that game, but that game could have easily been a 12 to 15 point loss. The reason that game came down to 2 points was because the Jazz couldn't throw it in the ocean from the 3-point line. They went 8 for 34 from three. They took 23% from three. Jordan Clarkson went 1 for 8 from three. George Niang went 0 for 3. Royce O'Neal went 2 for 7. Conley 2 for 7. Joe Ingles missed a wide open three in the second half. There was at least three shots down the stretch that they had, good shooters with makeable shots that just didn't even come close. That game could have gotten out of hand with even a moderate shooting performance down the stretch by the Jazz. And I think that's going to be something to watch. That defense needs to improve. I think if you look at the point totals, it shows a team that played better defense than it did. And I think that poor shooting from the Jazz is a big part of it. But, one of the things down the stretch too for the Pelicans wasn't even the sloppy play, it was decision making. I think Lonzo Ball is a heck of a player. He had a terrible game, and he was 2 for 11, I want to say, when he decided to take a pull up 15 footer and a step back three on back to back possessions with the game 1 or 2 points either way in the final 5 minutes of the game. And I just think that in that moment, you want a decision maker to make the right decisions. And I don't think that's what was happening down the stretch there. You also had Drew Holiday throw the ball out of bounds early in the fourth quarter. Zion threw the ball out of bounds early in the fourth quarter. And, it's beyond sloppiness at that point. It's just not being in that moment, in that zone that you need to be in clutch moments in fourth quarters. And you hope they turn that around. You hope that was kind of first game jitters and they turned that around on Saturday. I think that it's way too early to sound the alarms on the Pelicans. Oh, yeah. This was a very tough matchup for them. This is always going to be a very tough matchup for them. And it's still one loss in 8 games. There's a long way to go.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a tough game from Zoe. 2 of 13 from the field, 3 turnovers. He just did not look that sharp. He picked up 4 fouls really quickly. I think, he's added so much to his game. Really, the big missing piece from him, and this was something that Stan Van Gundy was talking about all night, is consistently finishing at the rim and not being afraid of contact inside. I mean, man, he had some brutal attempts at the rim last night. I mean, he had a right-hander that hit the bottom right side of the backboard and, didn't even glance the iron or anything like that. I mean, I can't tell if it's just a lack of touch around there. I can't tell how much of it is just he doesn't want to get fouled and go to the free throw line because he just really struggles as a free throw shooter. But I think that's really the biggest missing piece from him right now. He's just got to be more willing to go in there inside and just have a strong take. I mean, he's a 6'6" guy. There's no reason why he shouldn't be better. I know he's not the greatest leaper in the world or anything, but just go up strong.
Yeah, and to his credit, he was attacking the rim. He wasn't finishing. And, as the season progressed, I felt like he got better in that regard. He got better at creating angles to the rim and accepting contact. But it felt like last night felt like he kind of regressed a little bit. And I mean, when you're talking about it going against the Jazz, that's always going to be a tough ask for a guard to go in to the lair of Rudy and try to convert a contested layup. But, it, it, it's something that you watch his game and you watch him progress and you just need to see that. But I also think just, you know, even if he's not converting, just him getting to the rim is important. There was a play late in the second quarter that he drove to the rim and he missed, but, you know, he collapsed the defense, which allowed for an offensive rebound and a kick to each one for a three. And when the Pelicans offense gets stagnant, it's a lot of the time it's because they're not forcing the defense to move. They're settling. And I think that's something that he can do that not a lot of players on the team can do, is just break down a defense. So I'm hopeful that that was a blip, and maybe if he comes out and hits a shot early against the Clippers, that maybe he'll shake that. But 2 for 13 is, oh, that's painful, man.
Yeah, just one game. I mean, Rudy Gobert, obviously, you know, 2-time reigning Defensive Player of the Year, but was just kind of a bummer. The last thing I had in this was, I know Drew, you know, was sloppy in parts. He had 6 turnovers. I mean, he probably more than anybody else was responsible for their turnover issues. But I tweeted this during the game. I'm just going to be disappointed if I don't get to see Drew Holiday in a Pelicans uniform play in the playoffs one more time. I mean, that's one thing I've said, you know, on this podcast pretty much all season, is that I think Drew might be one of those guys who's better as a 16-game player than an 82-game player. And I even felt like I saw some hints of that last night. Like, he is such a good individual defender. I mean, there's a couple of times where he just put Donovan Mitchell in jail. I mean, he is one of the few guys in the league who can put all-star guards in jail like that. And I just want to see him in the postseason with the Pels one more time, especially with this group. If anything's just in this world, we'll get that.
Yeah, I enjoy watching Drew Holiday play defense. I enjoy watching Drew Holiday play basketball. I really like Drew Holiday. How do you root against that guy? I mean, and I tweeted this last night too. He doesn't get to play Damian Lillard in the seeding game, so he's decided to make Donovan Mitchell his target. But
how many sons does Drew want?
He just needs to pick a new one every game. But man, Donovan Mitchell is a fun guy to watch. Damian Lillard is a fun guy to watch. There's so many stars in this league. It's fantastic. The Grizzlies are playing as we're recording this. They're heading into overtime against the Blazers. That's just the fact that I can say that is so nice. I'm just giddy watching. I mean, it's basically just the NCAA tournament with a lot more money going to the players.
Yep, adult summer camp, but with really high stakes. You love to see it. All right, guys. Well, hey, we appreciate you for tuning in this week. We will be talking to you probably early next week. And happy basketball's back. And thanks for tuning in.
Peace.